China lays on 200% tariffs on Australian wine. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vishala Sripathma in for Victoria Craig. Good morning, great to be with you. Australia's trade spat with China took an ugly turn this morning. Beijing has slapped up to 200% tariffs on Australian wine imports. It's the latest Australian industry to be targeted by the Chinese, with lobsters, coal, sugar and barley all in the firing line. Relations between the two countries have soured after Australia called for an investigation into the origins of the coronavirus. Andy Xi is an economist based in Shanghai.
When the trade war started and the tech war began, Australia was quite ahead of other countries, even ahead of the US in some ways. So I think Beijing wants to really set Australia up as an example, especially for countries in Southeast Asia.
And what will happen, do you think, in the future? Do you think China are going to continue to target other key industries in Australia? Will this be able to be resolved?
I don't think Australia will back off. Australia really wants to be identified as part of the West. So it's understandable why it's been taking this approach. And I think that from China's perspective, I think Beijing doesn't think the domestic cost is big. If iron ore flow stops, then there will be a cost for the domestic economy. But in terms of wine, all those things, not really important. So Beijing has a lot of leverage.
But it's important to Australia and its economy. So surely at some point, Australia is going to have to do something, because wine producers, lobster producers, they really are taking the hit.
Yeah, but I think that Australia has to absorb the losses. So I think that's the way it's going to be. I don't see that Australian government will change its stance.
And do you think China will continue to target other industries?
As I mentioned earlier, iron ore is the biggest ticket item. China, in the short term, cannot find a substitute. So it's not been touched yet. If China can find a substitute, like supplies from Africa or South America, they'll do something about it.
Andy Xi, independent economist based in Shanghai, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi is set to visit a few of the country's vaccine-making facilities over the weekend. The country produces more than two-thirds of the world's vaccines, and a factory located in the western city of Pune is already making millions of doses of the Oxford-AstraZeneca solution. While this is good news for India, the second worst affected country by COVID-19, it now faces the massive challenge of inoculating more than a billion people. From Pune in western India, the BBC's Yogita Lamai reports.
Around 40 million doses of the Oxford vaccine have already been made at the factories of the Serum Institute of India. The company says half of its doses will be sent to other developing nations through the Global Vaccine Alliance, supported by the World Health Organization. The availability of a relatively cheap solution within the country is a big advantage for India. But experts warn that rolling out the COVID-19 vaccine will be far more complex than anything the country has done before, especially since it's likely to involve administering two doses to each person.
Let's check in with the markets. European markets remain subdued as the UK government revealed tougher restrictions last night. Now, for years, the Indian Ocean island nation of Sri Lanka was a close ally of India. But in the past decade, it's hugged another huge country much more closely. It's estimated that China has lent about $5 billion to Sri Lanka and invested huge sums in various building projects there. While initially the cash was welcomed, there's increasing concern, including in Washington, that Colombo is too reliant on money from Beijing, as I've been finding out. Sounds from a performance by the Arts Academy at Colombo University. This academy puts on Chinese-inspired plays and musicals after forging a strong relationship with schools and universities in China. The island nation just off the tip of India, with a population of around 20 million, has been getting closer to China for a while now. Since the bloody end to its almost 30-year civil war in 2009, it's struggled to rebuild its economy by itself, so the then-president and current Prime Minister, Mahinda Rajapaksa, looked to China, which has been more than generous in its lending. It shelled out billions to Sri Lanka to fund hotels, apartments, theatres, even a new port. And culturally, lots of Sri Lankans seem to be lured in by the Eastern promise of prosperity, with many young people signing up to learn Mandarin.
China is doing many activities with Sri Lanka. Therefore, there are many opportunities for Sri Lanka students that who learn Chinese.
Chinese is very essential language for us because China is the most powerful country in the world.
However, Sri Lanka has found itself in a quandary as it actually can't afford to pay back Chinese loans. So instead, has agreed for investors in China to have a stake in these building projects. Something that has irked global superpowers near and far. This is the US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on a visit to the country last month.
Sovereign Sri Lanka is a powerful and strategic partner for the United States on the world stage. It can be a beacon for a free and open Indo-Pacific. Look, that's quite a contrast to what China seeks.
Mr. Pompeo's concerns are shared by some in the country. Ravi Ratnasabhapathy is an accountant working on Chinese deals in Sri Lanka's capital.
There's an airport that's hardly seen any flights. There's a cricket stadium that's maybe had only a couple of matches paid in. There's a port that is yet to see significant traffic. There's a tower that's supposed to be the tallest in Asia, but nobody knows what we should do with it. So the most useful project was probably the coal power plant, which generates electricity. But the labor for the projects is also brought from China. So it hasn't created a lot of jobs.
But many Sri Lankans feel that there is no real alternative, with no Western investors stepping forward, and the pandemic hitting its vital tourism industry, they'll be reluctant to bite the hand that feeds them. It's Black Friday and even stockbrokers are getting in on the action. Half-price dealing fees for trades. In London, I'm Vishala Sripathma with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.